Welcome to Life Lab with David Ponder and Zach Schaefer. We are the podcast of Experience Experiments.
We give you those experiments via change challenges at the end of each episode.
We created this podcast because we wanted to talk about important topics that can help us all live meaningful lives.
You might agree with what we have to say, or you might disagree. But the point there is that you get something new to think about.
There's no edits and no gimmicks. Our entire point is to help you take action and live a better life.
You only get one life to live, so you may as well make the most of it. Hello, and welcome to Life Lab. I'm David Ponder.
I'm Zach Schaefer.
Today we're doing a fun one. The last one we did ended up being way better than we anticipated it would be.
Yeah.
We're excited about this one, so that's a high bar we're going to have to meet.
High bar.
Speaking of high, yeah. We're talking about drugs.
Drugs and perception.
All right.
Yeah, when I saw that one today, it literally put a smile on my face.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so why? Why?
They're fun. They're fun, man. Drugs are, when used responsibly, they can make you have a good time. Somebody said at my Uncle Pat's funeral, I thought it was one of the best compliments somebody could get. Or let me rephrase that. I thought it'd be a great compliment somebody could give me after I die. I'd love it. And that was, Pat, if you were with Pat, he always made everything better and more fun. And that's kind of how I think about drugs. Now, clearly, you can go overboard and have terrible experiences, but I have a lot of good, fond memories of experiences with those and the people around me and the events we were attending and games we're playing. So that's why I had a smile.
So obviously, you're talking about recreational drugs.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say to somebody who has negative feelings about that and no experience with it? I don't do drugs.
I'd just say, okay, like I'm not even, I don't care. Good. I'm not going to associate with that person at this point in my life just because as Bart Bennett says, my friend bench is full and I'm not going to fill it with people who have short-minded views on drugs. But what I might have said back in the day when I'd engaged those conversations is, okay, well, what's a drug? Right? And then I'd start asking, okay, what's a drug? Like, what's not a drug?
We'll go there. You've never done drugs, huh?
Mm-hmm.
What'd you
eat today for breakfast?
Yeah. Did you have coffee? Did you have caffeine?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a great point.
Have you ever had a beer?
So that's probably how I'd approach it. But at this point in my life, I'm not out. I just don't give a fuck. I got too much stuff. Good. You're anti-drug. That's immoral. Bad people going to hell kind of thing. Okay. Good stuff. Have a good day. Like, yes, I don't have time to engage, nor do I care to shift their limited view, in my opinion, but I probably would have done that 10 years ago.
Yeah, me too. I'm in the same boat with everything that you've said, and I agree with all of it. So
give a definition, man. This is a one.
Oh, yeah. All right. Keep.
You. Well, I've got some pulled up, and then you can see if what you find are different.
Yeah.
So it's today is not just drugs, but it's drugs and perception. And so here's what I think about when I think of drugs. It's a substance. It's something used to treat or prevent a disease, pain, or injury and alter our perceptions. That's what any drug. It could be recreational. It could be for treating Dave's former bouts with cancer. It could be putting something on my knee because I skinned it. To me, it's you're trying to treat or prevent an illness, disease, pain, or injury, and alter your perceptions. And so you got to define perception. The fancy definition is identifying, organizing, and making sense of environmental information. Perception is just awareness. So drugs alter our awareness, both on the physical side, if we're ill, and on the recreational side.
I think that's really good, that awareness thing. The definition I found said it's a substance that you take in the body that alters the body's function either physically or psychologically.
Yep.
But you have to be aware either of those for it to have actually worked. I mean, let's just talk about something really simple and let's tie it back to awareness. I am aware I have a headache, right? So I take a drug, Tylenol. I am aware that I now have relief
But interesting, let's debate here, because I think it's a little different. You are aware you have a headache. You take Tylenol. 9 times out of the 10, you're still having to work and do whatever it is you're doing. Yeah. I argue you're not aware that the headache goes away, and that's the magic. You're just you're just back in the zone of feeling normal, and most people feeling normal are absolutely unaware. They walk through life non-spiritual, non-aware, not taking in all the signal in tune in the present moment, because they're constantly thinking, what do I got to do next? What's tomorrow? I got to protect this. I got to have security.
So feeling quote-unquote normal is what you're saying, right?
Yes, which is not awareness, I believe.
Well, I'll say, I don't know, maybe I've just trained myself to be aware of things like that.
Sure.
You know, like, here's an interesting thing. An interesting thing for myself is I have researched things. It's a class of drugs. They call them nootropics. And all it is, it's substances that usually have mild effects on you, and that are purported to either increase your productivity, you know, increase awareness, decrease tiredness. There's obviously different classes of them. But I mean, caffeine is the classic caffeine, or the classic nootropic. If you go read about this, nootropics, the classic nootropic stack, which is two or more substances like that taken together, is caffeine and theanine. Caffeine's in coffee. Or tea. Tea gives you both of those. Hmm. L-theanine is in tea. And it's interesting because what L-theanine does is it takes away sense of anxiety. It's calming. It's leveling.
That's weird.
And two of them together, yeah, that's the thing. Is like, if you drink too much caffeine, you ever get that jittery, like off the whatever feeling? If you have theanine as well, you don't get that. You feel alert and awake from the caffeine, and you feel this sense of steadiness, evenness. It takes away the jittery. It's interesting. It's interesting.
I was just thinking of Britain, because they drink tea over coffee, but yet that country has a lot of collective angst as a group of people.
You know what? Okay, so we'll
and they talk about that themselves.
Well, we'll get maybe it's we'll talk about tolerance later. You know, but I will say that. It's like it's one of the most studied. Those caffeine and theanine is very well studied and very well accepted to improve performance on all kinds of mental acuity tests. So anyway,
read what's on my leg. What do you see on my leg? First, describe what you see and then read it.
I see an eyeball with some colors in the edge, and then the words perceptions precede morals.
So he's describing a tattoo on my leg that I've had. From a quote I wrote a while back, and it's all about perceptions. And so that's another reason I got excited about this topic, because I literally have a tattoo of it on my leg. Man, it's just we can't form – getting back to your drug question, you know, that they're really asking like a moral question.
Yeah.
Like they're judging.
What is okay right. And what is not okay.
Right. But we can't even form morals, what we believe is value judgments, until – we focus in on things. So perceptions, what we choose to be aware of and not aware of, where we choose to give our brain focus and our physical focus with our senses, that always will precede the moral judgments we form. So then it's up to you. If you want to change, if you don't like your morals currently, whatever they are, you need to change your awareness. You need to change your perception and what you're focusing on, and either open it up or narrow it down.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. It's funny when you talk about drugs and you tie it to people's morals. It's funny how it seems like, okay, so what I was just talking about, the desire to perform better. It's widely accepted as quote unquote okay, moral. Every office complex in the damn world probably has a coffee machine, right? Like, I can't get going till I have my coffee.
Right.
Right? I can't go until I have my stimulant in the morning. Nobody says that.
Nobody says that. Or yeah. You don't have a line of people coming out the bathroom taking Coke bumps off the toilet. Right. Like, gotta get my morning
right.
bump.
Right. And don't talk to me. I haven't had my drugs yet this morning. Right? Nobody right. says that. But they do. That's what they're
That's
saying.
Exactly what we're doing.
When they're talking about coffee. And you can get it in every drive.
We got it right now. We're doing drugs right now.
We're drinking drugs.
We're drinking drugs.
We're drinking some drugs right now. But yeah, you can get them every drive-through window. Everyone eats them with breakfast, whatever. And everything that is good and bad about drugs exists with caffeine. The tolerance, withdrawal, all of it. And we'll talk about those things later. But that's okay. We don't have to – like the – what is it? Would you want to say society, whatever, has set the standard, the moral standard. It's okay. That one's okay.
Yeah, well, yeah, and each culture, each group of people, society, country, whatever you want to call it. Not country's too big because then you have regional differences. But group of people,
you're right. There are religions.
We have our own. Yeah, okay. We have our own ways of doing things. So overall, United States coffee. Overall, Britain tea. Mm-hmm. But then you get in pockets of the United States and how they do their coffee. Or some pockets up northeast, they do like tea. You know, so it does depend. But we have agreed as humans that there's certain stories we're just going to tell ourselves and we're going to create a false reality to just gloss over the fact that these things are drugs. Like, we got to create euphemisms and be able to discuss it without making ourselves feel bad. And I'm an addict. I'm a huge coffee addict. I love it. I've already had to give up booze, man. If I had to give up coffee too, whew, world watch out. It'd be a dangerous place.
And it's so funny with drugs that are ubiquitous and talking about them in moral. It's like people think they're exempt. Like, oh, that's not the same.
It is exempt. Yeah, that's exactly the great word. It's exempt.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the exact same, but it's not the same. You know, I wanted to bring up – there's this drug that is chewed in some countries in the east. It's big in Somalia. I don't know where else it's big. Cat, K-H-A-T. Hmm. It's a plant, and they chew it all the time, and it's a stimulant. But it's, like, ubiquitous. Everyone chews this drug.
Just chewing on the cat.
Yeah.
And it's just some cat.
And obviously that's weird to us. That's weird. That's strange. But yet we'll
throw a fucking cigarette in our mouth and light it up.
But you get what I – like, if you went into the office and you're like, I got to chew my cat this morning before I could – look at the spreadsheet.
You walk up to somebody, meow.
Well, it's K-H-A-T.
But that's even cooler.
Got it. Be like, man, this, you know, I haven't had my cat this morning.
People doing their cat calls. But that could be a really fun thing that could take off.
Yeah, let me chew on this cat before I get going.
I'm sure that's crazy. But that would be weird. Been marketed. It would be weird until it's not.
Right, exactly. I mean, I'm surprised there isn't a company who's trying to get that normalize cat. It.
Oh, yeah. I could, some cool hip tech person. Yeah. Oh, you don't do cat?
If you can make money off of it.
Dead cat, right? The dead cat bounce, bounce, all kinds of things.
So obviously you've got these drugs that are considered acceptable. Like most people would even just consider coffee like food.
Yeah. It's food. It's part of my diet. What's not acceptable?
Cocaine.
Okay.
Heroin.
Yes.
And just about
crystal meth.
Anything that makes you feel – here's where I was going to go. If it makes you feel good – and I don't know why, but why is it that there is this moral line that's like, if the drug has a noticeable effect
on your mental,
where you feel good, mm-hmm. that's it. There's something wrong with that. Can't do that. Why is that? You know what I mean? Like, you could take all the ibuprofen that you want. You could take all the Tylenol that you want, right? Like, those take away pain to a point, right? But they don't make you feel good, right? Where let's take it up a notch. Now you've got OxyContin and some of these other painkillers.
They
try
to make you feel not bad.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because Tylenol makes you feel not bad. Ibuprofen makes you feel not bad. But there's this step, right? Like, I don't know what the next level is. Codeine, OxyContin, whatever these drugs are. Those work so well that you start to feel good. Mm-hmm. If you were just feeling normal and you took one of those, your headache would probably go away. Or even if you didn't have a headache, you would just start to feel sense of –
what does that mean? Euphoria, less inhibitions, less stress, less anxiety.
Yeah, physically, you start to feel
airy,
good.
Light, right?
Comfortable.
Why do people get addicted to this
overly
shit?
Overly comfortable.
I wonder why.
Yeah, exactly. It's like – you know, with some of those painkillers, I mean, obviously I've had illness of all kinds. I've had every painkiller that you could probably have, I've had prescribed to me. And the way that I think about some of those is like, you ever just be irritable and everything feels uncomfortable? Like mm-hmm. you notice the tag on your shirt, you notice the way everything rubs you the wrong way. Everything just feels bad. Like, and then if you take one of those painkillers – it's the opposite. Mm-hmm. Everything feels nice. Everything feels smooth, comfortable. Your mood gets a little bit elevated, right? Mm. It's weird.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great description. I mean, having just had the, well, not just had, but in February, the Achilles surgery, they gave me Oxycontin. And I'm not a big pill person. I never took pills to party, I guess is the best way to say it. You know, some people would, when they were young, while they're drinking, if somebody had pain pills, they'd pop those for these reasons, trying to just feel better or get more, you know, fucked up or whatever. That was never my thing. I had a bad experience once with it and never did it again with Vicodin. And so I've just never liked pills. I don't like to take them on my own. Whatever, that's just dumb narrative. I'm sure it's irrational, but it's who I am. So when I got into the surgery, I told the doctor, I said, I don't want the pain pills. And he's just like, yeah, you will. And he's like, look, you cannot do them after the first 24 hours. He's like, just take them the first 24 hours. And I did. And had I not, the pain I experienced, I didn't sleep that second night after the local anesthesia they gave me wore off, because it was just pounding, throbbing, horrible pain no matter what I did. And I was on the damn drug. I couldn't imagine what it would have felt like had I not been on it. It's like, whoa.
Yeah.
So then take that kind of physical pain and now put it in somebody's brain. And that's the kind of mental pain they're experiencing. And we still don't understand that. Of course people are going to do things to numb it and not think about it.
Of course. I mean, so what's going on when you take those drugs in your brain? What's going on? Basically, scientists, pharmacologists, whatever around here, take what I'm saying with – obviously, I'm trying to be high level. But basically, your brain's got these receptors, right? They're like waiting – it's like when you're a kid and you've got these toy sets where you can put a square peg and a square peg, a round peg and a round peg, stuff like that. And so your brain, whenever neurons are talking to each other, fires off messages from one side to the other, and those are regulated and facilitated by chemicals. And your brain has these receptors that are like a shape, and they're waiting for this type of chemical to fill that part of your brain, and that makes you feel a certain way. And what's going on when you're taking drugs is a chemical that you're introducing externally to your body is filling one of those receptors, and it's giving an effect. The interesting thing, and I think this is important, is – and I don't know that this is true, but I think they all create dopamine or GABA, or they create these things that fill those receptors in your brain. It's not like you take cocaine and the cocaine goes into your brain and makes you feel something. I don't think that's how it works. I think how it works is it stimulates or blocks natural chemicals in your brain, either blocks receptors from getting chemicals, or it puts additional chemicals into the receptors of these natural things, like dopamine, right? Mm-hmm. That's why they call it dope, right? Dopamine makes you feel good, makes you feel happy, but it occurs naturally in your brain. But when you take one of these drugs, it causes an excess of dopamine to be released, filling all these receptors, and you feel really good.
I like it. That's a good elementary definition to understand the chemical reactions going on in the brain.
And the reason I wanted to explain that is because we have to talk about some negatives, right? So tolerance to drugs. Like you can – there's this thing where you take a drug and it's great the first time. You feel amazing. But then the effects of it become less and less every time that you take it.
I think most people understand that concept.
But why? And from what I understand, it's like, let's say the drug blocks receptors, right? So let's say you have a chemical in your brain that makes you feel bad. This drug blocks the receptors and you feel good, that you no longer feel that bad. Okay, well, what does your brain do? Your brain builds more receptors. It's crazy. It's like your body's always trying to get back to baseline. Your body's always trying to work the way that it was supposed to work before any exogenous chemicals were put into it. So your brain will build more of those receptors. Now that bad feeling can still attach, even though most of the receptors are being taken up by the drug. So now if you want to feel the same way and have all that blocked, you need to take more of the drug. And it gets to a point where it just doesn't work anymore.
Hmm. Yeah. No, that makes sense.
It's weird.
It is weird.
I mean, I'm not a scientist, so I don't know how all that goes.
Well, I just think it's important when we're talking about this to talk about the function and what is happening in your brain, right? Because if we're going to ever – because then you can go
I disagree. I don't need to know how my combustion engine in my car works, but I like getting in it and driving from A to B.
This is a disagreement we always have. Yeah. I like that you're motivated by that. I don't give a shit what's going on in my brain, and I'm not going to spend the time to learn it. But I like that you're interested in it because it's an angle I'm not good at, and I know a lot of our people like hearing that.
Well, we have so drugs and morals. Like, why do we do? There's like anything. It's not like the tie between drugs and morality doesn't have a useful embodiment.
Mm-hmm.
It does, because drugs can become a problem.
Oh yeah,
they can become a major problem to a society, to a tribe.
Homelessness doesn't exist without also addiction problems. Period. Right. I mean, so homelessness is very difficult on so many levels, socially, economically, just from a purely human standpoint, it's tough. But you tend to not that's a comorbidity, right? If somebody dies of two different things, well, with homelessness, there's at least two different things going on, and one of them is always some type of addiction. And all these programs, we're going to try to – all the tech people, right? We're going to fix homelessness. Yeah, they've really done a great job using their new technologies in San Francisco to do that. Oops, no, they haven't. It's a horrible population, the largest in the world or in the U.S. But my point is, it's because you can't treat the symptom. The underlying root cause is there is some addiction going on, whether it's alcohol, very common, or other types of drugs or both. It's tough. Because once you're under the influence of any drug, not let's take food or like a normal drug that we all agree with, caffeine or nicotine. Let's take those out. But like booze or cocaine, heroin, meth, like the mega ones. I'm not even going to throw weed into this one, although you could. But if perception, being aware, having clarity and awareness is identifying, organizing, and making sense of environmental information – and you alter your perception, you are altering your ability to pay attention, to organize information that's coming into your senses. And that's a problem, especially with when you then make that altered state your normal state. So then your altered state of perception, coming to you from a recovering alcoholic here, if you're drunk a lot of the time or all the time, that becomes your reality. That's normal. And how you react and how people react to you, like that's your new story for yourself. And man, that's not good, especially if you have no awareness or no perception that's not normal. So I think that's interesting. And then you throw in the hallucinogens, like acid and mushrooms, and that's where the perception stuff gets really fun. Now, most homeless people, I assume this is a separate subject. I'm going a different direction. Most people do those recreationally, because they're trying to alter their perception. That's their whole goal of taking those. And you can have a really good experience or you can have a really bad experience. You know, Bonnaroo, a group of us went to Bonnaroo, the big music festival, 7 years ago this June. So one of our buddies turned 30 years old there. And man, what happens in the Roo stays in the Roo. It is a buffet of drug use. Let's just say that. Any drug you want, it's there at the room.
Concerts tend to be that
way. Yeah, and it's because you want to alter the information in your relationship to it that your senses are experiencing. And in music, always enhanced on most drugs.
Yep. You ever look at the back of a $20 bill?
Right. Because you're focusing in on all the small things that you don't normally slow down to do. So at Bonnaroo, you know, what's going on there? You've got drinking all day, pot, smoking weed, doing edibles all day. You got cocaine. You got Molly, which is the new form of ecstasy, which is just to make me feel good. You got acid. You got mushrooms. And you got all that going on at the same time.
So there are three main classes of these drugs: stimulants, depressants, and hallucinogens.
And I think
you hit all of them there.
We basically threw them all together. And so why do mostly young people do this? My theory is what I said. It makes you feel you are doing it to actively alter your senses, experience the world in a new way. Oftentimes with hallucinogens, at least with mushrooms, you know, you feel that connection to others, to the universe. And it's powerful and it's hard to put into words, but you can have really bad trips as well. But when you mix all that shit together or you take too much and just keep pushing the envelope, you eventually fall into the abyss. And it is not a pleasant thing. And so we had a buddy that was there and had never done some of these hallucinogenics before and took too much. And he had a coming to Jesus moment, man. He lost it. He just got up from where we were watching the concert and just took off sprinting. And he was gone for like 5-6 hours and had a very difficult negative experience. And it's funny looking back and laughing at it now, but at the time, man, it was intense. And so drug use for me can be so cool because it can open up your mind in different ways and it helps you connect and do things differently. Let me just say, I'm a big libertarian, so I think all drugs should be legal, first of all. I think they should all be legal, all be taxed, facilities should exist.
Wait,
to help people.
You don't believe that daddy government should tell us what yeah, we can right. and cannot right. eat?
And so let me say all that. And again, a lot of people disagree with that. That's fine. I actually believe in the sovereignty of adult human beings. You know, make choices, live with the choices, good consequences and bad. So legalize all of it. Prostitution, drugs, it should all be legal. Let people choose. But that's not where we are in society. And so then when people have to do some of these things, they're having to buy drugs. And sometimes those drugs, especially the chemical drugs like an acid or something, they're probably not made too safely. Man, and so when you see someone having a bad trip or experience,
it's so
it's
funny.
Scary.
It's so, you know, like when you hear the moral argument or the paternal you shouldn't do this because argument, I always try to like pay attention to how many times the negative effects that they are describing are because they've made it illegal.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
Like you said,
yeah,
like,
we could have a
that is so unsafe. You don't even know what you're taking, and it's like I know. I wish we did.
Right.
If it was legal, it could be made in.
We'd have a nice marketplace
regulated,
for these things.
Yeah, yeah, and it would be safe. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever.
Anyway,
what about this? What about other things that could be considered drugs? That so the substance used to treat or prevent a disease, pain, or injury and alter our perception.
Food
right?
is a drug.
So you could do food. But then sex, drugs, rock and roll. So sex, rock and roll, crit fun experiences. Fitness. Boy, I see plenty of people out on the old internet and their Instagrams and they're just addicted to fitness. Everything's fitness. Depression, I think, can almost become a drug. Human dependency, so too much dependency on another person, and then media consumption. So I think we could change the word substance used to substance used to do those things or habitual behavior used to do those things.
So yes, everything that you talked about, I mean meditation. People can hallucinate from meditation.
Yeah.
But basically, it's sort of like I said, right? Like those chemicals are in your brain. Dopamine, GABA, you know, and you can achieve similar states by having sex, by completing a very difficult task, by, you know, all of these things. But then you can just take drugs and boom, artificially manufacture it.
It's the immediate gratification we're seeking. The end goal, I truly believe, is to alter our perceptions. And if that perception is pain, reduce my pain, make me feel good. If that is mental pain and anguish, sadness, horrible things have happened to you, let me forget these things. You know, let me repress these things. At the core of all this is emotional, right? It's emotions. So then can emotions be a drug? Can people be so addicted to their anger or their joy or their sadness or their surprise that because they've habitually trained themselves to experience that feeling so much, there are chemical reactions going on in your head that reroute the receivers, as you were talking about, and it changes your perceptions.
We skipped something real important, or we just – hopped on it.
Yeah.
Can we go back and can we then
whatever.
Re-explore if emotions are drugs? And that is, people generally do drugs because they want the emotion. Yeah. Or they don't like the current emotion that they're having.
Replace or amplify.
And that's it.
That's it.
You know, like depression is a big thing that we have in our society, right?
And we prescribe it away.
We try to prescribe it away. Well, are you on an antidepressant?
Well, that's the route of least resistance.
Yeah. But many times when I've heard conversations about people who are battling with depression, that question always comes up. It's one of the first, well, are they on an antidepressant?
And that's the wrong question, in my opinion. It should be, how are you sleeping? What are you eating? Are you exercising?
Those are the exact and baseline.
And plenty of people do ask that. I do hear that from good medical providers or from helpful friends and family. And I don't downplay people if you're taking antidepressants. It's real, and they have real effects. Helpful.
And I don't want to downplay depression.
It should be part of an overall
program. Yeah, and I don't want to say, and I don't want us to seem like we're coming off saying, well, depression can be taken care of in 100% of instances with a good diet and sleep.
But those things absolutely contribute to it.
Right. No, but those – you should have all of those things in place. You should be doing all of those things. And if you still experience depression, then are you going to therapy, right? Like there's all these behavioral therapies, neurocognitive therapies and things. It's like – but those – all of the things that we talked about are hard. It is hard to get a good sleep schedule. It is hard to exercise consistently.
I would just say it's behavioral.
It takes time and effort.
Right. A pill doesn't.
Yes. And so for a doctor, if I'm a doctor and someone comes into my office and they say, I'm depressed, right? And I think of, okay, what are my chances of success to get this person to actually have a good sleep schedule, actually exercise regularly, and actually change their diet, and maybe even actually commit to a good therapy regimen. What are my chances of success on that versus that drug rep just came into my office the other day and he was pretty convincing that this pill they don't need to do any of that stuff. They could just take this pill.
Well, plus
my chances.
And how often does a doctor see somebody normally? Once a year?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. It's not even close. Of course, anybody's going to prescribe the medication in that scenario. It's the rational thing to do. It all goes back to this. It all goes back to the awareness. Perception, you can just think of it as awareness. We're unaware. But you used a great phrase. That's why I've got a book here in front of me. It's by a guy named Anthony DeMello. The book's just called Awareness. And he's a Jesuit priest who just wrote about spirituality, which he defines as awareness. But Dave used a key phrase, and it's so important. If you define yourself by a state, I am depressed. I am this. I am that. He's just like, no, you're not. You're experiencing it, right? And so you've got to build this story. And you used earlier, you said, you know, I'm experiencing depression. That's the way to think about these things, because the more we want to possess and hold on to it, it defines my I. That's a problem. But if it's just something, I'm human. Yeah, we all experience the ups and downs, the roller coaster of emotions. I'm in the trough right now. It'll pass. But yeah, it sucks right now. That's a different way to think about it.
No, that's
it's a stronger mindset. It's an aware. So people are always like, so do you never get depressed? He's like, are you kidding? Of course I do. But I know it's passing. And I just try to let it be there with me. And then once it goes, it goes.
See, what you're talking about, reframing, is a mental exercise, right? That would come as part of a good therapy regimen. For someone who was saying, I am depressed, a good therapist would explain to them these concepts and say, no. And as a matter of fact, let's do an exercise. Let's imagine what this is that's making you anxious, what that's causing you anxiety. And let's – every day I want you to wake up. I want you to do this exercise. I want you to envision that as a thing, as a ball, as an orb. And I want you to envision it coming out of your body and being separate from you and sitting in the room with you and you're looking at it. But be aware it is separate from you and it is not you, right? That's what therapy does, mm-hmm. right? But you don't got to do any of that shit if you could just take a drug, Zach.
Yeah, right. Right. Absolutely. Give me that drug. Why do people, as they get older, stop? Most illegal drug use is with young people. Outside of pill popping, that goes for people's whole lives until they die from it. But like booze consumption, obviously, you know, caffeine, nicotine, those things that are quote unquote acceptable. Weed pretty much now is acceptable. But why does the cocaine use and some of the other things, ecstasy, Molly, acid, mushrooms, those key ones right there. Why is that mostly a young person thing? Because it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't have a good, other than, you know, you get older, maybe if you do the quote unquote normal thing, you get a house, you get kids, you got a job.
You got responsibilities.
Yeah, you don't have a lot of time maybe. So to do some of those things, you might not have time to. I think it also has to do with risk. When mm-hmm. you're young, you're not thinking about you're just living. You're seizing life and you enjoy the surprise. Now you're a little older. Life's kicked you in the teeth a few times. Now you read more about this drug and what it's doing and to your brain and the receptors. And you're like, oh, that sounds a little scary.
Well, and I feel like when you're young, you're trying to explore. You want to experience new experiences. You want something different. Mm-hmm. When you're old, you're trying to make your environment, you're trying to control. You're trying to craft your reality, right? You're not trying to escape your reality. You're trying to craft your reality.
And convince yourself that your path was the right one.
Exactly, exactly. Plus, drugs are just bad. So what if you take
something that opens your mind and all of a sudden you're like, man, I've made a series of poor decisions. I need to change my life.
Yeah, that's really interesting because one of the drugs that you've mentioned, I think acid maybe and definitely MDMA, they were first used by psychiatrists are the ones who mm-hmm. can
yeah.
prescribe drugs. They were first used by psychiatrists.
Relationship therapy.
Yeah, they were created and they were – from what I've heard, right? From what I've heard and read, they were very effective at achieving the effects that these psychiatrists wanted them to achieve. They also made you feel high and they also made you lose your sense of perception.
Well, they were also used in interrogation.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
The CIA saw some uses, and who knows if that's still going on. But for a long time, they had an entire program, and a lot of that's declassified now that you can read about. Pretty crazy. They knew that it alters your perception, it creates a separate reality. In some of these psychotropic drugs. So they just dose the shit out of people
and see what happens.
And watch and observe. There's a couple of cool documentaries where people have volunteered more recently to do it, and they'll take some of these psychotropics, DMT specifically, and you get to watch what they're doing, and they're trying to describe what they're seeing, and they're just sitting in this bed. And it's cool, man. It's wild to watch.
Yeah, you know, when we talk about the three main categories of drugs, when we talk about stimulants, depressants, and hallucinogens. One of those things is not like the others.
Right.
And I feel like there could be an entire episode that we could talk about hallucinogens and what we know about them, our experiences with them, what we've heard and read about certain ones. The one that you just talked about, DMT, was one that I wanted to talk about because it is so drastically impactful, different. I've never experienced it, but, you know, I think awareness of those class of drugs is becoming more and more mainstream. I saw someone who wasn't – their content that they mostly post on social media is of a business, entrepreneurial, life success type, and they were posting about that drug specifically, DMT, and near-death experience. And how there are studies being done now that are tying the two together so that they're finding that people who have experiences with the drug DMT and people who have, you know, clinical death and then return to consciousness, they report similar experiences.
Yeah.
I think it's fascinating.
Yeah, yeah, the DMT for sure. I mean, we had a friend that got dosed with it and unknowingly dosed.
Unknowingly.
And somebody was passing a joint and they grabbed it and hit the joint.
Okay, speaking of morals, that morally that is morally wrong. I'll just go ahead and say that. To unknowingly dose someone with a drug.
That is morally wrong. I'll agree with that one 100%. But this guy thought he was just taking a puff of some pot, you know, at a concert. Again, why do we do that? The music, it feels better. It sounds, you can
enhancement.
Enhance. Well, little did he know, about 10 minutes after he took puff off the magic dragon,
he's going to leave this planet.
He was gone. He was in a totally different universe. And just hearing him describe what he saw was wild. As I'm telling the story, Dave is literally taking six pills, two of which look like a horse would take.
They're fish oil.
Six pills out of his pocket. Dave is taking horse tranquilizers over here.
They're fish oil. So I have to take drugs every day. Well, I mean, obviously because of my health. But anyway, let's get back to DMT.
But so DMT is interesting. It's the new version of, you know, the sexy new version of psychotropic drugs, hallucinogenic drugs. I mean, mushrooms, similar. Acid, similar. Mushrooms are at least organic, come out of the earth. Acid, somebody's making in a lab or a trailer. You know, mushrooms, I've done mushrooms. Mushrooms are great. But they can be terrible too. You can have really bad time. It's just, it changes your perceptions. Right? Everything is about, so when you go into it, the point I wanted to make with hallucinogenics specifically, this is a point I agree with. You have a lot of young, successful, wealthy people out in Silicon Valley, right? A hub of innovation. Let's try new things. Let's build new things. Let's change the world. Let's have grand visions.
Very respected. Very respected. Seen as like today's titans of industry.
Yeah.
Today's heroes.
And they're all about the hallucinogenics. So there's this thing called microdosing. Dave can talk more about that because he probably knows more. The point I'm making, though, is one Dave might disagree with, is you see a lot of these guys and they're trying to – they'll hire these guides to like do meditative trips, right? And they're just trying to do these things we're talking about. They're trying to enhance awareness, connect to the universe. And a writer that I really enjoy, Ryan Holiday, who's also a young, successful guy, he's like, I've never met, of all my friends and that have done this stuff, none have come back and like, I've got it. I've got the key to the universe. It's mine. It'll always be with me now. He's like, they're doing the same thing that you can do through meditation or working on my farm or reflecting and journaling every day. We're all trying to do the same thing, to understand, to go beyond. And he said the experience people get from the psychotropics, it's very fleeting. So it's powerful then, but then over time, it just goes away. And then it's just a faint memory.
The word profound comes to mind when you're talking through the story that you're talking through. I think of the word profound because I feel like everyone has profound experiences, or at least I sure hope everyone has profound experiences, regardless of whether you are or are not taking drugs. You know, there will be a time when you are on a hike, right? And you step out of the woods that you're in and onto a clearing and you realize you're up on a cliff and you have a view of the world that you never have. And you feel high inside. Something hits you inside that makes your skin tingle. And you just take it all in. It takes your breath away. And you have this understanding. Wow. Like, this is what I live in. This every day I ignore this. You know? Look at this beauty around me. It is a profound experience. And what you're talking about when you're saying, oh, these people are just trying to achieve the same thing, they just want that.
Right.
They want that profound experience. Now, like you said, it's fleeting, right? You soak that moment and you stand there on that cliff and you just look at it, all that beauty, and you think about all your problems just melt away. Why am I worried about that report that's due next week? I can't believe I've made that such a big deal. I've been stressing out about that. That's what's been giving me these negative emotions. Look at this beauty that I am a part of, right? And then you go to sleep the next day you put on your suit and you go into the office and you're worried about the report again,
right?
On Friday. That is the fleeting nature of that experience, I think.
My point with the psychotropics is if you're young and doing them just to experiment and have fun and enhance whatever, that, you know, that's never going to change. But if you're a little older and you're trying to do it for a calculated reason, don't try to convince yourself that your shit's going to be different
after you get out of that trip. Because it just ain't.
Can you bring something back, though? Can you have an experience like that?
Oh, yeah, of course you have a great experience.
Can you grow from it?
I think you can. I'm not saying you can't grow. I'm saying...
It's not going...
No one has ascended to Maslow's hierarchy of needs and self-transcendence from a trip.
No one has achieved enlightenment permanently from...
Correct. But it doesn't mean you can't learn from it. But emotions, that's why we're doing it, is we want to feel, right? Some people want to replace negative feelings. Other people want to feel something. And then other people want to amplify feeling good. Here's a story. I always have this feeling of driving around in high school in my 1986 Honda Prelude, my windows down, my music bumping, my what's the top thing called?
Sunroof
open. And just in like May. Nice breezy weather, and I'm out of school and I'm feeling good, man. I'm the king. I'm the top of the world. No alteration of the perceptions yet.
You can be high without drugs.
It was still early, and I'm like, man, I just don't get that feeling as much anymore. But I'm in a phase of life where it's hard, you know. And so that's where I think also people will use substances to try to tap back into those feelings of whenever it was, high school or college, when you just felt the king or queen of the universe and life was easier and simpler and more primal. I think that's why a lot of people will drink or smoke or do whatever drug of choice.
You hit the nail on the head when you said it's all emotion based. It is all about emotions.
100%.
You know, I think about the different uses of drugs and the ones that are acceptable and the ones that aren't. And you start with productivity drugs, and caffeine is number one, and that one's acceptable, right? And then, you know, whatever else you do. And then you've got like ones that college kids and I guess even professionals too now are using, Adderall and Ritalin.
From what anecdotally, Adderall is the most abused drug on college campuses, and not just from the kids, from the faculty. I don't know if that's true, but a lot of professors hear that.
And it's like, oh, it helps me take this test. It helps me whatever, right? But it also makes you feel emotionally stimulated. It makes you feel good about doing the work that you're doing, about the test that you're taking, right? It removes – it's almost like a motivator in those areas.
It's horse blinders.
Yeah.
Put on horse blinders, you don't think about the work you have to do. You just dive into it and do it. And then eventually you're like, holy shit, look at all the work I got done.
And you get positive emotions.
And you feel good about it.
You get positive emotions. That's the point.
But again, you can build tolerance to that.
Yep. Alcohol, right? Like – The first time that you have alcohol, especially in social situations, it is the social lubricant.
Oh my goodness!
Right?
It just makes all the angst you have and worry. If you do the right amount, now if you overdo it, clearly it can be bad.
Sure,
but you do the right amount, man. You're like, holy cow! That for an recovering alcoholic, it's like, oh my goodness!
Yeah, it takes those inhibitions away.
I either fit in, or look at how funny I am, or you're able to just be different.
I'm so outgoing.
It's easy.
I had no idea how outgoing I was until I started drinking alcohol.
Then it's really fun until it's not.
You know, so going back to the hallucinogenic ones, right? And trying to achieve something that is profound, right? Something I thought that was interesting when we're talking about growth and being able to grow from it was that I read about these studies where people are experiencing near-death experience with hallucinogenic drugs or psychotropics like DMT. And I just wanted to say, I think emotionally, a lot of that goes back to the fear of death. And that some of that class of drugs can make you feel as though basically lose your sense of identity and feel connected to something bigger, and that there is some relief in that. I don't know if I want to say relief. There is something good about that, right? People want that. People want to feel like they're part of something bigger.
Everybody. That's one of the key core qualities of humans is belongingness.
While doing the research, I came across this quote of someone who had done DMT. And they later compared it to someone who had a near-death experience. It was just crazy. They said the exact same things. But this is the quote from the from the person who had done DMT. I felt this quiver. The only other time I've had it was when I was giving birth. I'm not sure. I felt as if I'm not sure I want to do this, but there was a sense of no turning back. You're here and you've got to go through this. I don't remember my body being around after that. My body just didn't seem relevant anymore. And I felt like I arrived in some consciousness soup, which seemed like a different realm to the one I ordinarily inhabit, even in dreams. It just seemed like different. There, it didn't seem like the normal space-time proportions were going on. But towards the end, I remember an overwhelming feeling of gratitude that I had survived and a strange sense of reassurance. I felt, in a sense, that perhaps death isn't the end. Not that I'm religious, she said. And then they talk about that being reported as ego death, right? Like people losing the sense of self and instead feeling a sense of connectedness outside of their body.
Yeah, I like that. That's cool. Man, you hit that. They also hit on something there that's extremely important and that I almost forgot about when I was drinking. Something I loved. I really loved that about this when I drank. Drugs alter your sense of time. Huge, huge. She said time and space, and she's correct on that for the hallucinogenics. But for non-hallucinogenics, your time gets altered. So you take these drugs, drinking or weed or great ones for like concerts. Why do you do it? Because it speeds it up. No, it slows it down. It allows you to enjoy it in a more – at a easier pace. And it's about extending that emotion out over time. And so I always remember just, you know, if I have a couple drinks, I'll be able to hold on to this experience longer. And again, obviously, over time that – I ruined that. But people who can drink normally, man, I think that's one of the reasons they do it, because it alters their sense of time. It slows things down. Weed definitely does way slow things down. There was something else she said, altering the sense of time. Change. Another thing I loved when I drank a lot was I need a setting change. So I'd go from like drinking inside to just drink on my deck for a little bit. And there was just something different and new. It's like a new environment.
You know what?
When you're on drugs outside of alcohol, man, the setting changes are big. It's like, whoa, wow, this is different. This is new.
Yeah.
I loved doing those.
Perception changes. You notice that. You know, one of the things that I wanted to talk about, but let's focus in on this and then I'll try to circle back on that because I don't want to take this in a different direction right away. You're hitting on some gold. You know, I don't drink much in any one setting anymore. You know, like when you're in college and we were partying, we would drink, you know, as many beers as we possibly could drink before we passed out. We were really brilliant in that way. But that's typically, you know, the college thing. But now I'll have a beer, two. I don't know when the last time I had more than three drinks in a night was. What I've noticed, especially with this whole coronavirus thing, is – I've been having a beer or two at home on weekends, watching a movie, watching shows with Lauren, whatever. And sure, I get a little bit of a beer buzz, you know. I get a little bit of a good feeling, but it is nothing like when you're out with people and you are connecting socially and you're in a different environment. You're at a nice restaurant. You're at a nice bar, right? Like there is something that experience with the same amount of that drug is just two or three times better. I don't know what it's interesting.
It's two or three times better. Richie B, Neil's dad, man, he had a phrase for that. You know, he's like, bar beers are different than house beers. Bar beers are, and boy, he was totally right. It's because of the social, and he talked it through. He had a sociological explanation for it, and he was dead on. Like when you're consuming that in a lively setting, and other humans are consuming as well, and it's merry, even if you're not talking to people, but like there's excitement in the air, there's buzz. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's chemical things going on in our head that we don't know that's enhancing the alcohol. Or whatever it is you're doing.
And there's something about sharing an altered state with another person.
Yes, the sharing is key. And that's why for people that begin to then drink alone, it can get scary because then once you develop that habit, you don't need the shared experience. And maybe somebody, if the shared experience is like, hey, dude, stop drinking. You're drinking too much. Yeah. When you're alone, you don't have that.
That's right. That's right. As a matter of fact.
So thank you, Richie B.
Yeah. That's and being around other people that are in an altered state and you are not can be an annoyance, as a matter of fact. Oh, it can be.
Oh, boy. I'm just glad we're older now and people don't drink as much as they used to because I wouldn't have many friends if I had to quit drinking years ago.
But, man, it's so funny. I wanted to bring up that social aspect where if you are sharing that experience with other people, you know, like people who are not on the drugs see them and think they are ridiculous. But to them and inside their experience,
they're totally normal.
It's not just normal. It's great. They are experiencing something together.
Well, now you have an inside connection.
Yes.
You have a connection that can't be taken away, which is true.
Yeah.
And so then if you have a friend who chooses not to engage in some of those experiences anymore, there is a part of that relationship that's dead.
Yeah, you're right. That's very interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I see it very clearly. Like there's just certain things I don't get to do or I choose not to do. And I can see very clearly where key parts and often big parts of relationships that I still am very close with people, they're just dead. I'm not part of those stories and everything. And that's okay to me. I don't want to hear about them.
We've mainly talked about positives of drugs to this point, but you are, you know, we would be remiss to say, I got to say, man, the parts of the relationship that are dead, they need to be dead. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, but I mean, for me, I'm saying, but like if people can engage in drug use, whatever drug, recreationally and normally, quote unquote, normally, good. That's what they're there to be done for, to enhance the moment, create the connection, see the world in a new way, see the relationship in a new way. But once you go beyond that line, once you're a habitual line stepper of not being able to go back and do it regularly, well, you probably need help or you'll become homeless at some point if you take it too far.
It's that addiction. So there's very real dangers that come with this, as with anything, as come with depression, as come with needing reliance on an experience. Thrill seekers, you know, there's definitely danger that comes with this.
To me, it all gets back to emotions. Everything we're doing, especially with drug use, whether it's for the physical and pain prevention and treatment or the mental pain prevention and treatment, it's because we want to enhance joy, reduce anger, reduce sadness, feel surprise.
You're right. So the last point I want to explore a little bit is perception and going back to time.
Mm. Yeah.
Because I don't think we delved into perception. That's what's happening. It's not that time is changing. It's that your perception of time is changing.
Yeah, yeah. Your awareness, your relationship to time changes.
And the way that I've kind of come to explain the change in perception that happens when you're on a drug of some kind, I think about the way babies see the world. And I think about what we have developed in our brain that I call filters. Okay, so the way that we perceive reality, it's a learned way to perceive, in my opinion. I learned in general psychology, you know, freshman year of college, this concept, and it fascinated me, and I've held on to it ever since. It said, you are experiencing things that you don't perceive every minute of every day. And they said there's a great experiment that proves this in which you are hearing people – when you're in a crowded restaurant, you are hearing the conversations around you and your brain is actually taking them in. And in states of hypnosis, you can actually recall things that you never even realized that you heard. And they said, but to do it without hypnosis, it's an easy exercise. They put people in a crowded restaurant. They put someone at a table behind them and they would be in conversation with their table. That other table would be in conversation and that they would have someone at the table behind them say their name. And then they would basically see how many people would turn around or would stop, would recognize that their name had been said. And then that would just go to show that they were hearing everything that that person or that table had said that entire time well enough to recognize it, but it didn't trigger them out of their perception. Their brain filter was filtering it out.
Yeah, hearing versus perception.
And I think that that's a great way to illustrate the filters that we naturally have, that our brain has built, and that the reality that we perceive is because of those filters. Mm-hmm. And there's like a baseline filter that everyone's walking around with that we've learned that makes our reality the way that it is all the time when we're not taking
and
drugs.
And so drugs change the shape of the filter, uh-huh. put different filters in, remove uh-huh. that filter. That's what it does. That's a good metaphor. Yeah.
And I actually – I can remember when I had Marin and Dylan and they were infants, watching them look at the mobile that was hanging in their crib, and it just had – and I noticed every mobile, babies go nuts. It's got sound. It's got colors. It's spinning around. And I just thought, man, their brain doesn't have that filter. They're just looking at that thing. It's probably like they're tripping. There's sound and color mm-hmm. and movement, and they're laughing. They're giggling like they haven't built – I'm speculating here.
Right.
But no, it I seems like it. To me like they're early on. They're trying to build those filters. And you know, some of these drugs take that away.
Well, once the filters are built, then they can form their morals.
Yeah, of course. You layer all that shit on top of it.
Well, it's funny because it does tie into that. It's like, here's a good example of our filters and how ridiculous they can be. They're not all bad, of course, because we have to have a society. There has to be some order and a structure. Imagine this person. Imagine a 35-year-old man, normal family, whatever, kids, wife, they both have jobs, and he goes out and gets so drunk one day, makes a fool of himself in public, you know, kind of throws up or something ridiculous, smokes 2 packs a day. The next day he sees some of those people and apologizes, and they'll just be like, yeah, you know, that was dumb. But they totally accept it. They're just like, yeah, he was so intoxicated, he puked everywhere and all this shit he ingested, but it's totally normal. It was just booze and cigarettes. You take that same 35-year-old guy and he's like, yeah, man, I did acid yesterday. People are like, they lose their shit. They're like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
You did acid? What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Why would you do that?
Well, did you see how he was behaving?
Right. And even if he behaved totally normally and he's out and people have no clue, like that's the filter in society. It's like we've just chosen to say certain drugs are taboo and shouldn't be.
Okay.
Yeah. And certain are okay. Even if you're in public puking and being a fool, just like, oh, it was just drunk.
That's absolutely.
It's just drunk.
It's not that. Yeah. And people, that's a perfect one. I'll even bring it to this, right? Alcohol. Okay. Heroin.
Not okay.
Clearly not okay. What happens when you drink too much alcohol? You lose consciousness. You pass out. Your central nervous system is so depressed that you have the chance of stopping breathing.
Mm-hmm.
Choking. You can vomit and choke and die. You can. There, so many people die of alcohol poisoning every year. It is a real thing.
Well, and from suicide, from drinking too much and being depressed and then killing themselves.
Yeah. But I mean, just the physical effects of alcohol can kill you and do kill many people every year.
Yeah.
They get so drunk that they pass out. Some of them just stop breathing. Some of them, you know, choke.
But this is the normal, asphyxiate. This is the accepted drug in our society.
And that's okay. But it's alcohol. It's okay. It's
right.
A Budweiser, man.
Like, he just.
Of course. And
it was just drinking.
Whatever.
But right? if somebody goes and commits a crime or whatever and they're under the influence of coke or something.
Well, no, I'm just saying, but heroin. Let's say somebody passes out because of heroin at your house, right? If they have alcohol, it's like, we'll put them in a bed.
Yeah, we'll watch
them. Give them a bucket
give them a thing of water.
Yeah, make sure they drink as much water. They'll be fine, right? Can you imagine somebody being at your house and like passing out on heroin?
Ah, heroin overdose in the bathroom.
he just had a little too much heroin.
Right.
It's no big deal.
But again, I think our thought pattern on that is different because that drug's taboo and there is no structure for how you deal with those situations. So it is just so foreign to us. We wouldn't even know what to do.
Yeah. It's not like in college. In college, everyone's experienced either themselves having too much to drink or one of their friends having too much to drink and dealing with that situation.
Or just the normalcy of it. Like, I think at one point, the average U.S. citizen is exposed to alcohol advertisements on a normal Monday through Friday like 200 times in one day.
Right.
So just imagine that, and then it's just heroin. But it would be this. It'd be very normal. Is my point.
Right. Just a little heroin.
Right. They're coming out with all these seltzer heroin.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. Solution for the athlete in the family who needs heroin right after the race.
Oh, hilarious. Yep.
All right. So I don't have anything else, man. This was good.
Yeah. No. This was everything that I thought it would be. It was great. Drugs.
Drugs. Yes. Change challenges.
Do drugs.
Right.
Go out and do a drug.
That's funny. Mine is simple. What is your drug of choice and why?
Well, clearly it's caffeine.
Well, some people it is. Some people it's not.
For me.
Kizzy's not.
For me, it's caffeine.
Mine is now. It used to be booze. But then just think about why is my change challenge to people and what is that relationship? What emotion? Get to the core of it. What emotion
are you trying to create? Think about when you don't do that drug for a few days, what emotions come out. Is that how it is, or is it because you programmed yourself to be that way so that when your withdrawal symptoms are nasty and then you convince yourself, well, here's what I'm preventing.
Yes, it's definitely withdrawal symptoms. It's funny because I like caffeine so much that I'm on a caffeine management program.
Oh, God.
Well, I mean, I drink half-calf coffee because I love the taste of coffee. I love the whole experience of it, the smell, the ritual of making the coffee. I love all of it, and I don't want that. I want that in my life, right? But I've recognized that if I drink too many cups of full caffeinated coffee, I will get the jitters, and then I'll get a crash, and it becomes a negative experience. So, yeah. So I figured out a way to moderate it, right? Like,
nice.
Consume it through my day, try to even it out, you know, have that
rational approach to maximizing the emotion that he wants with the least negative baggage.
But it's okay, Zach. It's just coffee.
It's just coffee.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. Good. So yeah, analyze what's your drug of choice and why. What emotion are you trying to cultivate with it or to get rid of with it? Any chain challenges for you?
No, that's a good one. You know, like I would say recognize. Yeah, okay. Here's my change challenge. Without adding any new substance in your life, recognize the substances that you consume on a daily basis. And I don't just mean in pill form. It could be in drink form as a coffee or a tea. It could be in food form, as different foods even have chemicals in them that make you feel different ways. Chocolate.
We didn't even talk about chocolate. Shoot, that's a big one.
You know. But I mean, it's not just chocolate. If you start reading about foods, it's like, oh my gosh, all these foods have different ways that they impact the way that you feel.
Well,
you know?
Food, depending on how you define drugs, it definitely can be a drug if it's defined in a certain way.
I mean, it interacts with your body. To me, it interacts with your body. It makes you feel differently. Like I have an experience with things like carbohydrates, where the more I eat them, the more my body craves them. Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying is pay attention to your body. Pay attention to its cravings. Pay attention to your, you know, emotions and the things that you put in your body. Maybe journal. Journaling is the best thing. It's a part of so many of our change challenges. But in order to really recognize, because you are constantly putting things in your body and not recognizing.
Well, because we're not aware.
The way that
perception is scattered.
Well, and because certain things just aren't drugs, like coffee, like, you know, everything that we're talking about here, like chocolate or whatever. But it is. And having kids, again, makes me realize this sort of stuff. We obviously see the impact that foods with sugar, that any kind of caffeine, chocolate, whatever, that we see the impact that it has on our kids.
Well, we didn't even talk about technology as a drug.
Oh, God.
Screens, your little watch you're wearing there and the taps you get. That's absolutely altering
your chemicals.
It
causes dopamine. It absolutely does.
Oh, I got a ding.
Yeah. That is it. It's your condition, like Pavlov's dog. You're getting ready to salivate before the food. So, and that's a perfect example of how food is a drug, right? It conditions a response. So what I would say is, do some journaling about the things that you put in your body, the things that your body craves, when you feel good, when you don't feel good, and see if you can draw some correlations that you didn't prior have with things that are part of your everyday routine and say, you know what? Whenever I do this, I seem to feel like that. It's an interesting exercise. I had to go through it when I had my food allergy stuff, and it just made me really aware that everything you put in your body has an impact.
Hmm. Yeah. Excellent, man. Yeah. Well, hopefully you've enjoyed this one. It's been a bit more lively, I think, than other episodes. And just remember, everything we do in life, everything, but definitely with drugs or alcohol, whatever you want to call it, food even, it's about emotions. We're trying to maximize those good ones and minimize those bad ones. And drugs and your perception, your awareness of how you think and feel when you're under the influence of them, it's no different. It's all about emotional management. So just be honest with yourself and hopefully you can find those good emotions and not have to get addicted to any kind of drug in order to do so. So thanks for listening today, and as we like to say at Life Lab,
experiment with life.